is not just about the fentanyl. This is not just about the sex trafficking. These are major issues that are happening at the border, but it is now impacting every town, every city in America.
This is actually a real issue, a winning issue for Republicans. I think Republicans are jumping the shark. Don't get distracted on the Mayorkas stuff. Democrats are not good on this message right now. And I think Republicans need to hammer this if you actually want to fix the border.
And I'm tired of Republicans on their high horses thinking they're going to outmoral the other side. They don't care. They don't play by the same rules that Republicans play by. They're the ones who started the impeachment playbook. And I would say that over 10 million illegals in just 3 years is a big freaking deal.
All right. It is Friday Eve. We are on a glide path to the weekend here at the Sean Spicer Show. And guess what? We've got a great panel discussion coming up, breaking down everything those tech titans said. Are they really to blame, or is it the lawmakers to blame? I'm going to ask the panel today. By the way, tomorrow, Bill O'Reilly's on the show. It's going to be awesome. We'll do it live. Just kidding. And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday next week, big, big shows headed your way. Governor Mike Huckabee, Victor Davis Hanson, and Stephen Miller are all going to be here. But today, a huge panel discussion with Sarah Gonzalez. She's got a brand new show called Unfiltered on the Blaze. Erin Elmore, you know her as a contributor at Turning Point USA, an attorney extraordinaire, as well as Michael Starr Hopkins. He's an op-ed writer at The Hill, host of the Roots podcast, and a fellow contributor with me at News Nation. Let's get into it. All right, gang, good to see you. First, I want to just, as I said in the intro, Sarah Gonzalez, congratulations on the new show.
Thank you.
I'm a little torn. I'm excited for you. You and I have known each other. I always like to see people succeed, but now you're going up against me on the first. I stream early, but I'm at 7 o'clock on the first. And I was just like, okay, Glenn Beck, I see what you're doing. You're putting your number one person. I get Glenn Beck, what he's doing here, but congratulations on the big new show. I know it's going to be a success.
Thank you.
Okay. And Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's great to see you. All right. I want to start with some really important stuff today. As you guys know, Taylor Swift has weighed, a lot of people are weighing into this whole Super Bowl controversy. Erin, here's the thing. I at first, when people started saying, okay, Taylor Swift has got this, is a psyop, I thought it was like funny and people were making fun of it. In fact, this morning I tweeted out that there's a grand new conspiracy that Taylor Swift and Punxsutawney Phil have teamed up with the MLB so they won't see a shadow. So the spring comes early and MLB season kicks off better. I mean, like, I hate to say this, but I feel like this kind of talk is what makes society dumber.
Well, it certainly doesn't make us brighter. And I just think, as a football fan, first of all, my Philadelphia Eagles are out, so I'm bitter. And we do this every year. We do really well in the beginning, and then in the end, we fall apart. But that's neither here nor there. As someone who likes watching football, I do believe that Taylor is ruining it for everyone. They cut to her every second. She's doing silly dances, cuddling up, making faces. Like, I'm over it. And now they're in the Super Bowl, and then the big thing you're seeing on social media is that she's pushing for Biden, and that could have an impact on our election because all of these young voter Swifties are going to shift the election. So forget the conspiracy theories. All I care about is November of 2020.
Right. Hey, guys. As a former White House press secretary and a graduate of the U.S. Naval War College, I spent a lot of time thinking through contingency planning. And there's nothing better that you can do for yourself and your family and your loved ones than getting the Patriot Power Generator 2000X. When something goes wrong, a natural disaster, some other thing that attacks our power grid, you will be prepared. The Patriot Generator 2000X is the perfect thing for your house, your family. You can plug in everything, a refrigerator. So if you have medical supplies or food, you will be prepared. All of those other tablets and computers, things that are helpful for you and your family, the Patriot Power Generator 2000X takes care of it. The best part about it is it's portable. You can bring it in your house. You can take it with you on a trip, run it out of your car at a campsite. It doesn't matter. Put it literally in your house and on the counter and power the fridge. You can do it. Plus, it operates off a solar panel, which comes free with your order. You will be prepared. No running to the gas station, no worrying about anything else. The Patriot Power Generator 2000X is your hedge against the inevitable. Go to 4patriots.com/Spicer to get yours now. But Michael, here's the thing. Do you really think, I mean, first of all, this idea that she's going to show up on the Jumbotron after parachuting in from Japan, getting out of the plane, it just, like, I got to be honest with you.
Walking onto the stage.
She and Usher is, you know who's pissed about this whole thing, by the way? Usher. He's like, dude, I finally get to be the Super Bowl entertainment, and I'm now getting overshadowed. But the thing that I find fascinating is she endorsed Biden in 2020. Who cares? If you really are waiting to see who Taylor Swift endorses, then I think we have a bigger problem at hand. We should be making a case, and I get your side benefits from this, potentially. But here's my point. Who cares? She endorsed him in 2020. We'll find people. But if you're waiting to find out who Taylor Swift believes should be president, we have a bigger problem on our hands, societally-wise.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand as a Democrat, like, why this is such a big deal. She endorsed Biden last time. She endorsed the candidate against Marsha Blackburn before. Like, we know where this is going to go. The good thing that comes out of this is we've got more young girls watching football, which I think is really good for football, really good for sports. Like, that's the positive thing out of it. And as a Democrat, I got to say, we're sitting back wondering why the hell you guys are focused on this, because on the political side, you're just turning off independents. Like, this weird focus on Taylor Swift, I feel like, is just like suburban women.
Why is it turning off?
I think that there's this like idea of like, why are Republicans focused on this like weird Taylor Swift is like a CIA site op. Like, they're immigration's the thing you guys have a strong argument about right now. Like, spend all your time focused on that.
All right.
Or the economy, okay, but boys and girls sports.
Sarah, you're the Texan, right? So, I mean, first of all, I he's actually got a point. I appreciate the Democrats helping us out here. But we have a strong issue that I think affects mothers, you know, frankly, on the fentanyl issue, security issue. I mean, it's like it's a winning issue. And I, like I said, initially, I thought this was kind of cute and funny. It sounded, it was just like, I thought people were actually having fun with it. And then I realized like a lot of them are actually serious. They're like, no, she's a plant. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like you sound dumb when you actually think that this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I want to get this out of the way. I do love me some good conspiracy theories. So idea of a conspiracy, but I think you're right, because when Republicans get sucked into this, they miss the larger picture, which is what are we going to do to get culture back? What are we going to do to have our Taylor Swift up there touting Donald Trump or whoever the Republican, you know, nominee is? What are we going to do? Because it seems to me that all that we do is moan and complain on the internet about how Taylor Swift is a psyop and Taylor Swift is endorsing Biden and Taylor Swift is doing this and that. And trust me, she's insufferable at these football games. I get it. I can't stand it. I don't want to see her there. I'm with Aaron. The little dances and everything are so juvenile.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
I can't stand it.
Okay, but here's the thing. I heard a guy, an analyst on ESPN say, hey, Aaron said, as a football fan, he was making the case. I think what he said is, you know, we always cover the cheesehead and the guy that's doing this silly thing. And when it was Jason Kelce jumping out of the box, everyone thought it was cute. So what's the harm in 40 seconds of Taylor, who's bringing more people? I mean, they had their highest ratings of an AFC championship. What if you're a football lover, don't you want more people watching football?
No. I just want to watch my team. I don't care how many other people are watching.
I'm a Commanders fan, so we can't really watch our team.
No one watches them.
Exactly. But how many guys around the country are now watching football with their wife and their girlfriend, you know, as a result of what the Taylor Swift song?
Honestly, I think the opposite, Michael. I think that the more women who are watching sports who are Taylor Swift fans are not going to know anything about football. And I think they're going to be painfully annoying because they're going to be asking questions the whole time. Why did they blow the whistle?
How many home runs did they get? I don't get it. Why did they get 7 home runs there?
I'm lucky. My wife is a huge sports fan. Yeah. So I don't have any problems.
All right. Let me shift.
I got sports begrudgingly because I have a 10-year-old son. So I've watched every single Phillies game last season, even when they didn't matter. I know so much about sports now that it's really against my will, but you know what?
I think that makes the case though. Let's move on to a more serious topic though, which is the border. We're in the midst of this. I mean, talking about issues, I'm torn on this Mayorkas impeachment. I had Alan Dershowitz on the show, who, again, liberal Democrat. People get, I read all the comments when I have Dersh on the show, And there are people, why do you have him on there? And I'm like, because Alan Dershowitz is an admitted and avowed liberal Democrat that supported Donald Trump, not because he likes Donald Trump, because he stood up for the Constitution. And I believe we've lost that. And he made a case on the show that said, hey, the impeachment against Donald Trump was wrong, right? It was without merit. And I said so. I defended him. But similarly, there is no high crime and misdemeanor when it comes to Mayorkas. You may disagree with his policy, but that's not what the framers created impeachment for. Sarah, as a Texan, you'll start with you. Where do you come down on impeachment? Is this, I said yesterday to Alan, I go, hey, look, I don't mean to sound like an 8-year-old, but they started it. And he said, you're right on that front.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that if Republicans were serious about impeachment, it would have happened a long time ago. So I don't hold out much hope that this isn't anything more than just a dog and pony show. But I think it should have happened a long time ago. I mean, you were looking at record amounts of fentanyl, as you pointed out, pouring into this country, namely through Texas and Arizona. You're looking at, you know, all of these unvetted strangers. And I want to remind everyone, they're not just coming from, you know, Mexico and El Salvador. They're coming from places like China and Russia. Right. His spoiler alert, they're not walking straight here. They're catching a plane south and they're walking through our open border. Why would they be doing that? Maybe because they don't have good intentions. We see these people, you know, on video saying, if you don't know who I am, you're going to know who I am soon in a thick Middle Eastern accent.
But again, I 100% with you. I brought this up with Chad Wolf earlier in the week. There's a guy literally saying, you will know my name. That's a pretty strong threat. What does that have to do with whether Mayorkas has committed a high crime and misdemeanor?
Because these federal officials, what else are they supposed to be here for other than to protect, defend our borders, defend our sovereignty of our nation, and protect Americans? They are neglecting, they are abdicating 100%. Their responsibility of protecting Americans, and they are prioritizing other nations and citizens of other nations above their own citizens. I personally think that that is a high crime and is an impeachable offense. And I think that not only Mayorkas should be impeached, I think Joe Biden should be impeached on it as well.
The one area where I think Republicans need to strengthen the message is what you said. This is a security issue. This is threatening the sovereignty of the United States. And I think that's where it should be singularly focused to make it about him not doing protecting the country. Michael, Let's leave the legal argument aside from this and go back to what I said to Alan Dershowitz. You know, you guys started this. I've said this when they were going after Trump for the second time and it made no sense, right? You're trying to get a guy out of office that's out of office. And I said, this is going to come back to haunt Democrats. And I listened to Hakeem Jeffries the other day. And he said, this is purely political. And I was like, okay, but you started it, Michael. I mean, your team, your side chose to go after Trump when it didn't make any, like there was no real effort to get him out of office because he was out of office. And if that's the case, then this is the payback. And it may suck and may sound stupid, but Democrats started the process of politicizing this last year.
But here's the problem with this. I think Republicans are jumping the shark because this is actually a real issue, a winning issue for Republicans. As a Democrat, I for a long time dismissed the border as kind of one of those Republican talking points. This is just a fear tactic. Fentanyl is just something that you guys talk about on Fox all the time. I have absolutely come around after spending time with people from Texas, from Arizona, from Colorado, really learning from people who have had experiences with overdoses, things like that. It is a real issue. It is something we really have to focus on. But when you attempt to impeach Mayorkas, it distracts away from the real message. And look, Democrats are not good on this message right now. And I think Republicans need to hammer this. If you actually want to fix the border, then don't get distracted on the Mayorkas stuff. That's where Democrats are going to talk about Republican overreach and all that stuff. Focus on the policy of the border. I mean, we're not good on this and we've got to get better. And you've pulled us into a discussion where I think we're going to get better.
All right, folks, if you've been watching the show for a while, you've heard me talk about my friend Leo Grillo. He rescued a Doberman years ago, and he named the dog Delta. Delta stands for dedication and everlasting love to animals. He took it a step further. He founded Delta Rescue, and if you go to deltarescue.org, you can see some of the amazing work that they do. Just check out those videos. Look at some of the things that they do and the research. It's amazing. It's a no-kill sanctuary. You notice I didn't say shelter. It's a sanctuary. Dogs, cats, horses, they all roam free. They get the nutrition and the care they need for life. That has been Leo's mission. But it doesn't stop there. Leo wants to make this an enduring mission. All of Delta Rescue runs on our contributions, $5, $10, $100, $1,000, whatever you can do. But Leo really wants to make sure that this outlasts even him. So if you go to deltarescue.org, you can check out not just the videos, but go to the estate planning kit and think about whether or not helping animals and ensuring that Delta Rescue lives on is part of your mission as well. Go to deltarescue.org, make a contribution, but then download that estate planning kit, deltarescue.org. Check it out now. So Aaron, Michael just made the case that I've been saying for a long time, which is we are about to take a winning issue and turn it into something that unifies Democrats, meaning they'll protect Mayorkas, they'll talk about the politicalization, where they play a much stronger game. And we've moved off of a field which we were 100% right on and 100% compelling on with respect to not just people in Arizona and Texas, but you know, New Hampshire and Massachusetts and California, who said, I agree, drugs and terrorists are coming in the country. If it's not done right, it backfires.
See, I don't think the average American even knows who Mayorkas is. I think we are all living, sleeping and breathing this. Although it is a distraction, although nothing will come of it, I think the border issue remains present. And you guys have only mentioned several states. You're not mentioning New York State, New York City, and Chicago. These urban areas are completely decimated with illegals. And that's what's waking up the Democrats who have been lifelong loyalists to the party. They're saying, wait a minute, these people are hopping in front of me to get public housing that I've been on a list for 5 years. Wait a minute, my kid's school was closed so migrants could sleep there. When I walk down the street in New York trying to push my baby stroller, I'm tripping over beer cans that illegals have left around. People are harassing me in the street. This is not just about the fentanyl. This is not just about the sex trafficking. These are major issues that are happening at the border, but it is now impacting every town, every city in America. I live in Jupiter, Florida, which is an idyllic small beach community. I've lived here since May of 2020 on the beach. Two times, same exact spot in front of my house, boats full of migrants washed up, same spot. You think that's an accident? Okay, it's not. And by the way, these aren't people from Cuba, which is 90 miles of Key West. These are people that were identified as Haitian. So every single community has a story. We were all told to stay inside, lock our doors. My husband was driving. Two of the guys ran in front of his car as they were trying to run into a nature preserve, and my husband almost hit them. So this is scaring people everywhere. We're seeing the impacts absolutely everywhere. If we just simply focus on what is happening, really Americans left, right, and center are waking up. So I don't think that Mayorkas, whether they impeach him or they don't, or they make a dog and pony show out of it or not, is really all that relevant, because the average American isn't thinking about it that closely.
Sarah, the thing that's so interesting to me is that Republicans have a razor thin, and it's gotten thinner, majority in the House. Ken Buck from Colorado pretty much has said that he's a hard no on impeachment. There's a couple others that have said that they don't find the case compelling yet. If this falls short, that to me, well, then you've really screwed this up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe it's because I'm from Texas that I am so passionate, although Aaron made you can't deny the argument that Aaron just made that this is impacting not just Texas, but, you know, cities across the country. But I personally, this guy is calling the shots at DHS, right? I mean, we're talking about the policy and how we need to talk about fixing the policy, but he is the policy. He is enforcing not enforcing the policy. Right. And so I don't know where else you go. I would like to get all of these people who claim that they represent their constituents on the record for whether or not they support these policies. Right. I want to know. I want Ken Buck on the record. Are you voting for keeping the guy who is allowing all of these unvetted strangers into the country, who is allowing all of this fentanyl across the country, who is allowing for all of this sex trafficking across the country? I want you on record. And then I want you to go back to your constituents and I want you to tell them why you could have done something to stop it, because I know maybe impeachment is a distraction, but this guy is the head of DHS. If we remove him, it will send a message that the next person needs to change the policy. Maybe I'm naive, but I just think if not...
We could change policy.
What would
now.
I change?
No, I said we could change the policy
but he's
now.
He's not going to enforce it. But
Sarah, let me ask you this. I'm just asking this. Can't you philosophically say, I'm with you 100%. I'm against the current policy, but I don't believe that the remedy is impeaching the guy. Would that be an acceptable answer? to you?
To me, no, because to your point, Sean, I'm tired of Republicans on their high horses thinking they're going to outmoral the other side. They don't care. They don't play by the same rules that Republicans right. play by. They're the ones who started the impeachment playbook. And I would say that over 10 million illegals in just 3 years is a big freaking deal. Like, I mean, it's way more of a big deal than he had a phone call with Ukraine saying, I want to root out corruption. Donald right. Trump had a phone call that they impeached him over. We are talking about complete neglect at our southern border. We're talking about potential terrorist attacks on American soil that can be traced back to this regime's lack of enforcement of the border. I think that we need to just stop trying to outmoral the other side and say, fine, you guys want to put impeachment on the list every single time we're mad about something. This is actually something to fight over.
Yeah, I will agree with you on this broader principle. I'm tired. I've appreciated what Mike Johnson has done to some degree, and some of these where it's like, if you don't fight, and that's what I think happened in this Harvard case with getting Claudine Gay out, is Republicans finally started to say, to develop a backbone. Michael, I want to ask you something that I am a conservative. So when I make this argument about Democrats, it's what my analysis is. And so I want you to tell me if I'm off or on spot on this. Mm-hmm. Biden came out the other night and said, if I was given this legislation, I'll close the border on day one. My take on this is that he knows where the base of the Democratic Party is, which is not to close the border, mm-hmm. right? That's where the progressive base is. But he knows that he can say something like that because the legislation is not going to pass.
Absolutely.
So he gets to appease a certain wing of the Democratic Party by saying, I would do this, knowing that wink, nod, it's not going to ever be able to happen. So I can say, well, unfortunately, legislation didn't pass, and still appease that far left base that doesn't want him to close the border.
Yeah, I mean, this is why it absolutely blows my mind that Republicans aren't going to call his bluff. I mean, the legislation, yes, you're not going to get everything you want, but you're going to get so much that you wouldn't have gotten before. It's going to upset the progressive part of our base heading into 2024, and you're going to shut it down just because Trump wants to. But like, I don't think you understand how much it would actually upset the Democratic progressive wing if he actually did shut down the border. And by allowing him the opportunity to be able to call these victories without challenging, I mean, it's, Sean, you know this. This is almost political malpractice.
So, Aaron, play off what Michael just said. If let's just say hypothetically, and I'm picking it because I haven't read the text yet. It's not out. Let's just say hypothetically that the bill that the Senate is considering gives us 60% of what we want. Just 60. Why not take the 60, bank it, and then still talk about, because you know that Biden's not going to close the border on day one. We know it. I think Michael's absolutely right.
Absolutely.
This is a bluff. So the question to you is, take what Michael said, riff off of that, and say, do you take the 60%, bank it, and then be able to one up those guys when they don't close the border, or do you shun the 60% and campaign on it?
You know, it's really a bit of a political conundrum, because what's in that 40? Okay. What are they jamming into this bill? That's what I would want to know. So as you said, we haven't seen it yet. So we're just surmising and speculating. But what scares me is they're going to give Republicans a little bone, but we don't know at what cost. So that's,
And Sarah, the thing that's interesting about the legislation that I've heard so far, right, is the hit is it doesn't go far enough. Okay, right. Fair enough. And I agree with that. Especially for people like you in Texas and the folks in Arizona, whatever, on the border. But what I haven't heard, the one criticism is that it has H-1B visas in there, high-tech, high-skilled workers in it. Okay, I'm not sure that that's the biggest giveaway in the world to be letting in more people who are going to create jobs in America. But that aside, if that's the greatest criticism, like I haven't heard, oh, we're doing these bad. I mean, what is the worst part of the legislation that you've heard so far that would make you urge people not to support it?
The more money, more taxpayer money, more money from you and me and Aaron and Michael that is simply going to go to Border Patrol, not to actually deter these illegals, but
process.
To allow them to process them. Yes. And that's what's so frustrating for me is that why do we need to give our money to them to process more illegals into the country? That it's absurd. It's infuriating. And for me, that would be a hard no. And on top of that, you can tell me if this is what you heard. One of the other things that I heard is that there's going to be a daily cap right? Like 3,000 or 5,000. Yeah. Well, once we get to 5,000, then we're going to shut the border. So you're going to admit that you have the ability to shut it down and then just say, but we want a 5,000 max and then we'll shut it down. I mean, you have to hold these people's feet to the fire and say, we're not going to give you more of our money and have you admit that there is a problem and then just blatantly say, we're not going to take care of it until we've allowed our maximum in. It's just on principle.
Right. And that,
it doesn't make any sense.
The number is what concerns me. I also agree with you on the processing piece. You're going to get more money. Why are we using it to process instead of stop? Here's the one tactic that I think that James Lankford, the Senate senator from Oklahoma, that's negotiating, should use. Democrats, because of exactly the strategy that Michael has laid out, have gone out and said, oh, you should just sign this. And they get it because they know Republicans are going to eat their own. If I were James Lankford, I would take what Sarah just said and what Aaron said, combine that and say, you know what? We're on board as long as you do the following, right? Mm-hmm. So they take out the caps. They switch out the money for more border security. The Democrats, you know, to use an old phrase, they're already pregnant on this issue. They've already said they're for it. So now you go in and just say, okay, well, you just got to change these five provisions and we're with you. And then the Democrats have to, you know, call your bluff and say, mm-hmm. no, now we're against it. Well, the media wouldn't know what to do with that.
That's an easy one.
To me, Lankford should just call their bluff and go, okay, here are the five things that we need to do, because they've done a good job of creating this media narrative that it's so good. It's so good. And we're just we're not accepting it. Lankford should use that to his advantage negotiating wise and say, okay, here are the five things that Republicans need. And if you give us those and get, I mean, exactly what Sarah articulated, I think this is actually, they could flip this, but they just don't know how to win an issue. I do want to segue into what happened on Capitol Hill yesterday because it involves the Senate. All these CEOs, these tech CEOs were up there. I just want to play for you guys real quick this exchange. Obviously, it's gotten a lot of play of Senator Hawley and Mark Zuckerberg.
So you didn't take any action. You didn't take any action. You didn't fire anybody. You haven't compensated a single victim. Let me ask you this. There's families of victims here today. Have you apologized to the victims? Would you like to do so now?
Well,
they're here. You're on national television. Would you like now to apologize to the victims who have been harmed by your product? Show them the pictures. Would you like to apologize for what you've done to these good people?
And this is why we invested so much and are going to continue doing industry-leading efforts to make sure that no one has to go through the types of things that your families have had to suffer.
Mr. Zuckerberg, you and the companies before us, I know you don't mean it to be so, but you have blood on your hands. You have a product that's killing people.
Okay, so I have several aspects I want to play for you or break down on this. The first is you heard Lindsey Graham say, you have blood on your hands and da-da-da-da. The first thing I started to think to myself was, I'm sorry, who are the people that write the legislation in this country? Because I get it. They should be pounding on these CEOs for what they're doing to children. They know social media is addictive. They know that wink nod that they're actually marketing it to them. And yet the senators are acting like they're useless. They're like, you know, you guys need to do this. Well, the Senate gave them Section 230, right?
Just gonna say that. 90s,
what's that?
I was just gonna say that.
Well, I mean, then go on. Because to me, this is the problem. These guys acting like, oh my God, you tech CEOs. And I'm like, really? What's preventing any of you at that dais from doing something, Aaron?
I'm sorry to interrupt you, because that's exactly what I was thinking about. Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which basically has immunity for all of these tech companies from any liability whatsoever. And you see them all bloviating and saying how sorry they are. Well, sorry doesn't make the pain go away. The damage is done. And in the law, we always say that subsequent remedial measures are inadmissible. These are subsequent remedial measures that aren't changing the lives of children who have been harmed irreparably. And for people on either side of the aisle, somewhere in the middle, to stand up there and bang their fist and say how bad it is, it's not changing what has happened, and it isn't changing Section 230. If they really cared, they would go about that right now. And that's something that I do think the Democrats and Republicans alike can have unity on. because if they 230 is really, really bad. And it's basically giving them the green lights to do whatever they want without any recourse whatsoever.
Sarah, Lindsey Graham sat there and said, well, when it came to smoking, we gave the FDA. When it came to whatever, we had the ATF. And, you know, you guys just sit there. And I'm like, all of the institutions that you discussed, Senator, were created by acts of Congress. Mm-hmm. So do your job.
Yeah.
Do your job.
I totally agree. Although I will say, I would like to just point out, I think that there is blame to be shared here because all of this is solvable. And all of the senators and congressmen who want to sit there, as Aaron pointed out, and bloviate about all of these problems as if Mark Zuckerberg is the only one who can change something is ridiculous. But I just want to say, I also, let me tell you this, my oldest son is 11. He has no access to a smartphone. He has no access to a tablet. He has no access to social media. Why? Because I'm the parent. And so I do think that there is a little bit of responsibility that we need to point out that is on these parents who should not be allowing their children to be babysat by these screens, because we all know what's on these systems. We all know what's on Facebook. We all know what's out there on the internet. And so I just wanted, the mom in me just wants to point out responsibility of the parents to stop letting their kids have access to this.
Hey, folks, are you looking to secure your financial future? I know during the Biden economy, that's something that all of us are trying to do more. I've added precious metals to my investment strategy. And the people that I trust to do that are the folks at Bishop Gold Group. Now, if you go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean, you can begin your journey as well with a special promotion. Or you can give them a call at 844-984-1616. These are the people that I picked up the phone. I called them. I walked through my particular situation. And we came up with a strategy. Now, maybe you have an IRA that you want to roll over. Maybe you just want to diversify your investments. But people at Bishop Gold Group are the people that I trust. Give them a call or go to the site, bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean. You get on the phone, you talk about your particular situation, and they'll help you come up with a strategy. Maybe you keep some of the gold with you. Maybe they do it for you, but you can work with them one-on-one to come up with a strategy that's good for you. So go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean to begin your journey to financial freedom through precious metals. I've said this before on the show. Like, I have these conversations with parents who are like, I can't believe. And I'm like, you do know you're in charge, right? I mean, we keep acting like somehow the parent isn't giving the tablet or the computer or the phone to the kid. I think Sarah's right that there's blame to be shared here. The parents are allowing some of this to happen. Now, I will say this as a parent, you can't be there to monitor 24/7. And there are times when I say, where did you see that? Oh, it's at a friend's house or whatever. Yeah. But there is an element, Michael, of personal responsibility that factors into it. Obviously, those tech CEOs are doing what they can to get in every nook and cranny of our lives. And the senators have a role, but there is a role for parents.
Yeah, there is a role for parents, absolutely. But I think this is kind of reminiscent of the way that we treated cigarettes and the way that they were marketed towards children in vulnerable communities. And they didn't know kind of the effects that it could have on the long term. The reason that this isn't getting fixed is because of money and politics at the end of the day. We all know that lobbyists are the ones who are reaching out and building these PACs and building these organizations that are funding senators and funding House races that make it so legislation's not getting done. Like, that's it.
That was the one aspect. I knew I had forgotten something, and I'm glad you brought that up, because same thing. They kept talking about how powerful they were. And I'm like, they're powerful because they're paying for you guys. They're if you don't take their money or accept their lobbyists, then they can't do it. But I just loved the fact that these guys on the dais yesterday acted like they were these innocent. They're like, you guys are so strong and powerful. And I'm like,
while taking Facebook's PAC money.
That's right. Yeah. It's like they've got one hand out and the other hand's trying to slap them in the face. They're like, I hope I don't hit you hard enough that I can't take the cash from you guys.
Exactly. And like that, at the end of the day, I think that's where voters don't really understand the system, because they see this fake anger from senators on one side of the table, while also as soon as that meeting ends, they go shake their hands and like,
we want camaraderie.
Exactly. Like, we want camaraderie, but we also don't want fakeness. And there's so much fakeness in Washington.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of fakeness, I like to consider myself a fairly an expert in apologies. And I thought right out of the gate, my initial reaction was I gave Zuckerberg credit for turning around, right? Because Holly tried to do this holier than thou, like, do you want to apologize to these families? And most weasels would sit there and just be like, Senator, blah, blah, blah. And just Zuckerberg got up and faced them. Now, until I read the transcript, I kind of gave him some credit. I was like, wow, this guy's getting up, turning around, facing these people, looking them in the eye. And then I read what he said. I'm sorry for everything you have been through. It's terrible. No one should go through the things your family. And I was laughing. The media kept saying he apologized. Tell me where it's he is sorry for everything you have been through. Not for anything that I, Mark Zuckerberg, or Facebook, or Meta have done to you, Aaron. That is the weaselest of apologies. I'm sorry that you feel bad.
Sounds like it was drafted by a very astute lawyer.
Yeah. If you do say so yourself.
Yeah, that's more than
it had that vibe of like a weird breakup. It sounded like a weird breakup thing. Like, I'm sorry that you felt hurt. I'm sorry that we couldn't work out. Like, it's Zuckerberg.
Yeah. I'm sorry you feel that way. I'm sorry
exactly.
How you feel.
Uh-huh.
Sucks.
Where do you rate that? Give me a scale of 1 to 10. 1 is an amazing apology, heartfelt, sincere, authentic. And 10 is I just threw dirt in your face. Where do you put that one?
8.5.
What? Oh, wait.
I don't know why I did your scale. 10 is like a crappy apology?
Yeah, 10 is a perfect apology.
Oh.
Like the second to the lowest. If 1 is a really...
Second to the lowest would be a 2.
All right. Yeah.
Sarah Gonzalez, give me a number.
Math right there.
Yeah, I agree. School, too. So I
have to Aaron Elmore, a lawyer extraordinaire, mathematician to no one.
That's right. I have a very expensive accountant.
They teach us 33% in law school. That's all we got to know.
Or okay. 0.1, 6-minute increments, 0.1.
There we go.
All right, Aaron, Sarah, give me a 10 being a perfect 10, 1 sucking. Where do you grade that apology?
I agree with Aaron. I would say a 2. I would say a 2 is fair.
Michael?
I'm going to throw in and make this bipartisan, 2.
Wow.
Yeah. The thing that was so beautiful, like I said, you know, I always have to relate something to politics. It's like if you listen to the Kennedy-Nixon debate on radio, you thought Nixon won if you watched it on television. And when he initially got up, I didn't have the volume on and they didn't caption it because it was spur of the moment. And I thought, wow, that is a smart PR move. The guy turns around and is looking him at the eye. And then later on, they started captioning it. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm sorry that you feel that way. I mean, that was pretty pathetic. I get why I did it. Speaking of the lawyers were like, listen, if you blame us, we're just going to get sued out the yin yang. And this is going to be a huge legal problem. So I went from thinking that it was completely sincere to how legally contrived. Exactly what Aaron said. Some lawyer said, if you apologize, the only thing you can say is the following phrase.
Mm-hmm. Good old Zuckerberg.
So
I want to know Zuckerberg's bunker. Forget all this.
You want to?
Let's go.
Listen. You start to realize, speaking of, you know, I think Sarah must have said it earlier, if all the conspiracy theories, if all these guys are building these massive bunkers, what's going on? What do they know?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Taylor Swift and Kelsey. there's something going on with the NFL and a bunker. Anyway.
I like it.
I do want to touch on an issue that is, if I cannot get over every morning when I turn on the TV. Crime is becoming a bigger and bigger issue. Yeah. I know, Michael, you live in D.C. Mm-hmm. This is something that what is blowing my mind. I lived in D.C. in the mid-90s through Marion Barry. Yep. Crime was a big problem then. I always not joke with people, but it's a true story. I woke up one Saturday morning. My car was gone. And when we called the police, the guy literally, I won't say his last name, but the officer said, oh, it's got to be Kevin.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm sorry, Kevin? And he goes, yeah, Kevin. And I still know the guy's name in my head, but I won't say it. And he said, yeah, he steals cars. And I was like, oh, could I get mine back?
Hey, Kevin, can I have my car back?
Right. No. Well, so here's the funny story that I'll end with this. I said, well, he couldn't have gone far because there's no gas in it. They did find the car 7 blocks away at a 7-Eleven in Northeast D.C. But he had filled the car up. So I got a free tank of gas. The downside is he threw my mixtapes out. All my mixtapes got thrown out. My roommates were actually very excited about that because my mixtapes were not exactly cool, palatable. As I think the word they used, hip, enjoyable. So my roommates were actually excited that Kevin, not using his last name, had stolen my car. But There were no, like, literally the cops knew his name, knew what he did. And I feel like we're back in the era now. The difference is Kevin was a grown man. And apparently, according yeah. to the officers, stole cars for his drug habit. The kids now, Michael, are these young kids. And I listened to the news do these interview with parents and whatever. And they're like, there are no consequences. And these kids face, you know, literally one of the parents of the victim said today, so the problem is these kids know that they're not going to face any jail time, any serious penalty. And so what is the answer here? Because you have DC, it's your party 100% controls it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got to say, I don't really know what the answer is here, because you're right. You're seeing juveniles commit crimes at such high rates, and they're getting younger and younger. We saw here in DC a shooting and a carjacking, a 9-year-old and a 12-year-old. I grew up here. So I'm a Washingtonian. I grew up here in the 90s and the 80s when it was really bad, when it was the murder.
You know, capital. Kevin?
he's my next door neighbor. You didn't know? Me and him went to high school together.
Hope your car's okay. I doubt Kevin. Yeah, right?
But it's sad because you're watching the city kind of go back, but it,
yeah,
crack isn't here. And so at least you could understand why in the 80s and the 90s, it was based off crack. Now you can't, right. You don't see the same kind of thing because the city looks like it's flourishing. When you drive around DC, it's luxury condos everywhere, but you can go from one block where it's luxury condos to one block and it is row houses that are abandoned. And they've learned it doesn't make sense to rob your neighbors who also have nothing in Anacostia, and they're coming across to the more upscale neighborhoods. And so we're seeing this all over the country. This isn't exclusive to DC.
It's exclusive to liberal cities.
Crime's actually down in liberal cities, in cities all across America.
That is not accurate. I mean, it's not. It's just simply you're analyzing data in a way that is completely and utterly a manipulation of data, because every major city right now is completely destroyed. And the answer is actually very simple. Let's get out the George Soros elected district attorney. Yep. Let's prosecute crime. Let's fund the police. Let's allow those police to hit the streets and arrest these people. Let's make loitering and homelessness like more of a crime if they're, you know, in certain areas.
I was a public defender. Like I was a public defender in Manhattan, and New York can't arrest its way into fixing crime.
It worked a few years ago.
Yes, they can.
But they can't. Like, I had clients who had 45 misdemeanors, and it was loitering, it was stealing from CVS, and them arresting them, continuing to arrest them, wasn't solving the problem. It was
right, because they need to throw
issues.
Them in. No, they need to so throw wait, them but, in jail
okay,
for
so
longer.
Michael, I guess my question is, so you're the guy on the front lines. You see this like over and over and over again, right? Yeah. So what is the deterrence model? If I know that I can literally steal forever, why get a job? I mean, for a while, it was like Bill Clinton wanted midnight basketball and it gives people something other to do. Mm-hmm. I've been making the case that if you know that crime pays, I steal a car, I get $500. Tell me another job that's going to give me $500. Not going to happen. So crime now pays. What is the answer that stops that?
So I think I already gave it.
I would reject the notion that crime pays. I mean, the people who are committing these crimes, it's not like they're living these lavish lifestyles. Like I know it's different when you're talking about drugs and things like fentanyl like that, because the selling rate is higher. But people who are just carjacking, who are robbing CVS, these like petty crimes, they're not living high lifestyles. So we've got
It's not about a high lifestyle, but they're doing that in lieu. It's not like if you went to one of those people and said, okay, I've got a job, it pays $20 an hour. We'll move you into that. It's not a question of living this life of luxury. They're choosing to do that instead of working.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that. I think there is a lot of issues with people in wanting to work versus seeing they can go out and rob and steal. But I think to get to the essence of what you were talking about, the violence we're seeing in cities in terms of like murder and violent crime, it's scary. People like me are looking to move out of the city, and I'm from here. And so
they're going to bring their politics with them and ruin our conservative cities.
Yeah, yep, yep.
I'm taking crazy pills, as they say in Zoolander.
Because to Aaron's point, I think it's naive to say that we don't know what's causing this. We see what's causing this. They are decriminalizing petty theft. You can go into a CVS and steal up into a certain amount and you won't get charged. You can go to a drug den, an outdoor drug den, where you can use drugs on the street as long as you're within a certain area. I mean, we are decriminalizing things that used to be criminal that they would throw you in jail for. And to Michael's point about, you know, people having a long rap sheet, well, maybe they didn't stay in jail long enough to actually serve the time for the crime that they committed, because we're seeing in places like New York and all of these other liberal run cities, these Soros DAs, to Aaron's point, who are going in there and yeah, the police might arrest them, but then they're dropping the charges. I mean, we saw people in the summer of love of 2020 burn buildings down and they got arrested, but their charges were dropped. So they saw no real consequences. If we are finally serious about cleaning these cities up, the liberals need to drop the DAs. They need to get people in there who will actually not only enforce the laws, but enforce the consequences as well. And that is when you will see change. And Michael, please, for the love of God, if you move to a conservative area, a suburb, do not vote for these same policies.
Well, the lucky thing is, I don't understand.
Just so we're clear, though, in Michael's advantage, whether it's moving a little out to the north to Maryland or south here in Virginia, we're all controlled by the Dems anyway. So he's
got no choices.
He's got no choice.
Don't come to Florida. Right. We don't want you. God bless.
I'm coming. St. Pete. Just wait.
Dude, I'll tell you this. He's not going to DeSantis world. No. The one thing that's interesting,
DeSantis
by the way,
Palm Beach County,
is that Sarah said, you know, in D.C., they're actually even closing the CVSs for exactly the reason. So I think it's policy choices. It's the DAs. It's the councils to make. I mean, it's a combination of a lot of things, but I've appreciated the discussion, folks. Thank you for everything. It's been a great, great Thursday. I always love these panel discussions. Tomorrow, folks, Bill O'Reilly joins the show. Next week, Stephen Miller, Victor Davis Hanson, and Governor Mike Huckabee. Tomorrow is Groundhog Day. We know what that means. Taylor Swift and the MLB have come up with this ground. I'm just kidding. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. Continue to subscribe. We'll see you back here tomorrow on the Sean Spicer Show.